Welcome to This Is Not About Your Body, a body neutrality podcast where we talk about all the real shit body image issues are actually about because they're never just about the way you look. I'm your host, Jesse Nealand, and today I have with me Luna Matadas, who is a sex and pleasure educator with over 18 years of experience teaching sex and empowerment workshops. Luna celebrates body confidence, self-adoration, and building shame-free pleasure in and out of the bedroom. She teaches 30 plus sexy skills topics, including threesomes, BDSM, and sexual confidence. She created the Peg the Patriarchy and Meditate, Medicate, Masturbate brands as part of her sex positive and feminist merchandise. And I personally love Luna's very warm, inclusive, and playful approach to topics that are generally considered kind of awkward or embarrassing or taboo. So I'm very excited to have her here to talk about all things kink and pleasure and eroticism. So welcome, Luna.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat about all those topics from this beautiful angle of your podcast.
Awesome. So I'm going to have you start off just by talking a little bit about what it is that you do and also maybe how you came to do it.
Yeah, for sure. So as a sex and pleasure educator, I get the beautiful joy of being able to help people build skills in things like communication, consent, creativity, and all of this kind of confidence building stuff that we didn't really get when we were in our high school sex ed. So right. We didn't learn how to talk about desire. We didn't learn how to navigate issues like shame or performance anxiety. And so we're missing a lot of the tools as adults to connect in our erotic experiences. So I get to teach workshop style kinds of classes where people are coming with different questions on a specific kind of topic, but then they also get a little bit of the community joy of talking about these things either virtually or in person where other people don't know what they're doing either. You know, this kind of like framing that we're the only ones that aren't good at the sex, but really we just need the tools. And I actually got into this from a public health angle. So I worked internationally in Eastern and Southern Africa, and I'm based in Canada, doing HIV prevention management and work around kind of public health issues like sexually transmitted infections. And so no matter where I was in the world, you know, someone wanted to know, how do I do the sex, right? Like, how do I do the thing you're telling me to be navigating, worried about, or scared that this is going to happen? Yeah. And so that pleasure piece was really, really missing. And I saw that as such an opportunity to bring my kind of style of education into that.
I didn't know that about your background. That's interesting that, like, it makes a lot of sense coming in from the sort of safety and health mindset that people would be like, okay, but who else am I going to ask? I'm going to ask this one person I've come across to be like, okay, but what about the other thing? Like the actual doing of the thing?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. People want to know, how do I eat this? How do I lick that? How do I put this where, you know?
Okay. So because we're going to be diving into the topic of kink and BDSM, I wanted to take a moment and have you give a little bit of a definition. Like, how do you explain these concepts to people who aren't familiar with them, or how do you define these terms?
Yeah, kink is kind of an umbrella term. So kink can really vary in its definition depending on the sociocultural kind of context. So what might be kinky in the UK might not be kinky in Canada or kinky in South Africa or whatever. So kink is usually defined as something as creative sex that's outside of what's considered kind of, I'm doing air quotes, so the normal sex, what we think of when we say sex. So kink has a lot of possibility for things like queerness and gender fuckery and really like going outside of the norms of what we kind of see in just sort of heteronormative heterosexual expectations around sex. Yeah. So even heterosexual people can benefit from kind of queering and kinking up their sex to open up more possibilities. And then BDSM is a particular set of tools. So you could be kinky and not be into BDSM. BDSM is bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, sadism, and masochism. So there's a bunch of sensory tools in there. So changing the way that our mind and body relate to our erotic inputs. So that I do this thing and whoa, that feels really different because we're changing kind of the states of experience of the body and mind.
I love that definition. That's awesome. Okay. So I think it's super interesting to think that kink in particular is so context dependent that it really just speaks to what's outside the norm, which is I almost feel like, you know, something like anal sex, which 30 years ago was very, very like out of the norm, probably would have been considered like a kink. And now it's so mainstream, it's just like the way that a lot of people have sex now.
Yeah, that's the perfect example. Anal is the perfect example because I mean, if we were on a podcast with gay men, maybe anal
Right,
wouldn't
right.
necessarily be something that is considered kinky. And while not all gay men have anal, it's something that we would expect in that community, for example.
Right, yeah.
And you're right. I think as society changes, as society gets open to new things, or we have influences or exposure to things, what's considered kinky, even what's considered obscene, changes over time, right?
Right.
So, queer sex used to be considered obscene. Sex with
Right.
pregnant people used to be considered obscene. You know, menstrual sex would be considered obscene. And in some places, it still is.
Right, interesting. Okay. So, what do you think most people's general impressions or misconceptions about kink and BDSM are? Because my guess here would be obviously there are probably plenty of people who listen to this podcast who are more familiar with these concepts, but my guess is most people have a pretty minimal exposure to them.
So for anyone that's listening, I'd love them to think about, you know, what's that image, right? Because for me, that image, when you say BDSM, it still is whips and chains and leather and black, right? So it's like, you know, I think mainstream porn, which is pretty much designed for the male gaze, has really limited us to what we can conceptualize as BDSM. So I think people think that BDSM has to have a lot of tools, that you need a lot of gear, you need a lot of stuff, a lot of hurdy things, you know, and yeah, maybe, sure, but there's so many other ways. Like you could do BDSM with everything you have on your body, sitting here doing the podcast right now, right? We just need our senses to be able to do that. People also think that it has to be cruel and cold, and that, you know, you can't bring in, I'm super playful, I'm super warm, I'm affectionate, and I didn't think that was allowed in BDSM. I thought you had to be much more stern and kind of stoic. And I'm like, where's the fun at? You know, like where are we doing like the fun stuff?
That's so true. I
I
mean,
also
even the image of like a sex dungeon, like a BDSM dungeon, we don't have like an airy, sunlit sex loft. Like we don't have the comparative like version in our minds.
We need like a sex solarium, kind of
Yeah,
like, you know,
exactly.
like, And I also think that we see particular bodies represented in BDSM. So you might think, you know, if I don't have this kind of body and I can't wear latex that looks in a way that, you know, people find attractive,
Sure.
then we're kind of self-censoring our possibilities in pleasure. And so I saw a lot of cisgender white heterosexual men doing things like dominance and doing power exchange. And so as a fat brown queer femme, I thought, okay, maybe that's not for I want to wear a tutu and like boss people around. Like where's the space for that? So I think what's represented is not even a tenth of it. I like teaching kink because it's infinitely creative. It is infinite creativity. You get to put whatever you want into it.
I love that. And for any listeners who are not watching the video version, I just feel like I need to paint the picture that Luna is like sitting in a tornado of bright colors and pink. Like it is such a playful, joyful visual. You've got like a beautiful pastel dildo and butt plug behind you. Like this is not scary, sexy, dungeony vibe.
Exactly.
So, one thing that I think part of the reason I wanted to ask that question is that I would imagine that someone who's listening to this and it's like, oh, okay, so this is an episode of this podcast for kinky people, and that's not me. I know that one of the things you talk about is the spectrum of kink, so I kind of wanted to have you like touch on that a little bit here for maybe how to speak back to someone who's sitting there going, well, if I'm not into any particular kink, like, is this still a relevant conversation?
If you like any kind of creativity in your sex, you like changing things up, you like trying something new, That's an invitation to kink. I mean, kink is so much about helping folks also learn about themselves. So kink can be about self-development. It can be about exploring different sensations. It can be about connecting to your partner in a different way. There are a lot of things that I participated in that I wasn't initially super turned on by, but I was intellectually curious about, why the hell are you turned on by this? Like, why do you want to do this thing? And, what a fun path to follow, right? Like just kind of wandering down your little kinky path. So this spectrum is that most of the things we see and hear about kink are on the far end of the spectrum in terms of level of intensity. So we're seeing probably the most entertaining things, the most artistic things, the most performative things. And for those of us who, maybe we watched 50 Shades of Grey or we read the books or things like that, that also is fantasy. So how do you take your fantasy and bring it into a reality that's actually attractive for you? So maybe you watch 50 Shades of Grey, you like the power dynamic. You want to play with a little bit of surrendering power or leading with power. Well, you can do that by asking your partner one night if you can be in charge of when they orgasm. So if they have to kind of just give it to you and you get to say, okay, now, or come for me, or something like that. That's kinky. That's power exchange. So is having someone in super bondage or mummified in saran wrap or, like those are all on the same spectrum.
I feel like something you said when we chatted before that I really loved, that kind of highlights the spectrum of kink was basically like if you've ever fantasized while masturbating or during sex, like congratulations, you've done kink. That essentially all it is, and because we see these really exaggerated versions portrayed, we don't necessarily connect to the fact that like, oh, so you had a fantasy and it was hot to you? Great, you've done this. Like, this is not a brand new concept, totally separate from your experiences.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you remembered that, because that was one of my barriers to this, is that I had all these wonderful fantasies, but I thought that I wasn't kinky until I put them into reality. And so everything you fantasize about doesn't have to turn into reality. It can turn into a version of that fantasy. Maybe it's not safe or accessible for you to actually do the full fantasy. If you want to have a threesome with a unicorn and an alien, that's like maybe a little bit hard to come by, but you can dirty talk about it. And the biggest part of kink is your erotic imagination. So whether you pick up a paddle or rope or whatever you want, those are just vessels. They're just tools. And so your imagination is what's going to fuse that connection between you and your partner.
Yes, I love that. Also, it's so funny, like a long time, well, basically as long as I have been a sexual being, I have used words. I've had an active erotic imagination and I have really enjoyed putting it into words. So, I feel like even when I was like probably way too young to be doing this, with the discovery of things like chat rooms and, AIM chat and whatever, I feel like something that I would always do is sort of sext a story. Like I enjoyed the creation of like creating a very elaborate scene. And later in my adult life, I had it reflected to me a few times that that's really unusual, that people would be like, whoa, like you have like a really specific style of doing this. And I was like, oh, why? What do other people usually do? And they're like, just like, what they want to do to me or what they're doing literally. And I'm like, oh no, we've got like. But part of the reason for me is that a lot of those things can't happen or wouldn't be safe to happen or wouldn't even probably be that enjoyable to happen. I've always like really enjoyed that. And I totally had this idea of myself as not kinky because it all lived up there. And then when those guys would reflect it back to me, like, you seem really kinky. No one else has ever like created this elaborate scene in this way. I'm like, oh, is that like, am I doing it a thing? That was not my ever understanding of it because I didn't have enough wild experiences in the world to feel like I was a part of whatever these words or labels would be,
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that experience. I think I've had conversations with folks who, if you say, hey, what are you into? And their answer is sex. I'm into sex. Let's do the sex. But for people like you who have this vivid imagination, it almost creates more connection points. So we can land in the thing that you're interested in, or we can land in the feeling of the thing that you're interested in. And no matter if you're with someone for one night or 10,000 nights, any human interaction is going to have feelings, you know. We're
Right.
gonna you can be smashing bodies together, but like we are still having feelings. So
Right.
why not take advantage of that? Like, why not for folks who struggle to kind of get out of their head and into their body, that's like a big part of it, is connecting to those feelings. Do I want to feel fear? Do I
Yeah.
want to feel helplessness? Because
Ooh.
most people are not fantasizing just closing their eyes and thinking, spank me, spank me, spank, you know, there's a
Right.
person, there's a position,
Yeah,
there's
there's a
a
vibe.
feeling, there's a vibe. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a vibe. Yeah.
So something that you do as a pleasure coach seems to be basically helping people who might otherwise maybe feel a bit intimidated or overwhelmed by the world of like erotic imagination and kink and pleasure, explore what they like, what turns them on, what gives them pleasure, et cetera. And I feel like this might be a dumb question, but why does that matter? Why is that so important to you?
I think that the biggest challenge to feeling confident in any kind of sexual experience is feeling like you belong in your erotic experiences. And that feeling of belonging is connected to removing self-judgment. And so the more that you feel like you can take up space in your experience, the more empathy that you have for your partners in that their experiences might be different. The
Right.
more that we can kind of take sex out of the performative space and put it into play, and the more that we can actually say, hey, you know what? I'm into this thing today. Maybe I'm not into it on Tuesday. So we can have this like real spectrum and journey of sexuality that isn't dependent on what people expect of our bodies or our sexual selves. So it makes it easier for people to navigate life experiences like postpartum or menopause or disability. You know, there's
Right.
this relationship of coming, you know, coming into your or coming into relationship with your pleasure over and over again is such a great skill, because then we can have erotic experiences throughout our
Yeah.
lifespan and not just like what patriarchy tells us, which is like you're dead at 25 or whatever, you
Right.
know.
So it obviously brings better sex. I mean, I guess that one's a given, but it also brings self-acceptance. It brings a feeling of connection, safety, belonging, like all the things that we crave can be discovered on the path to discovering erotic fantasy and pleasure. What is the way most people approach it? Like, what are we taught in the mainstream, the sort of scripted version or whatever, like that we have fantasies and then what? Or
That we
maybe
have
that we
fancy.
don't even have them. I don't even know,
Yeah,
actually.
I know, maybe you just like do the thing.
Yeah.
I think we're taught that if you have fantasies, that there's something kind of perverted or perverse about it, because you're not just kind of, you know, doing whatever the norm thing is. So the kind of escalation of you kiss and then you do something with the genitals and then someone gets
Right.
penetrated, you know, and that's not a lot of our experiences anyways. But I think that there's such a reluctance to have communication around this, not only with our partners, but with ourselves. And so we are often, you know, kind of giving into what other people want. And so the self-consent piece is missing, because we're not
Yeah.
owning our experiences, we're not owning the quality of our experiences. And we're focused on approval from others. So we don't even know what we like, but we're focused on like, well, I
Yeah.
need this person to like the way that I look when I'm giving them oral, or this person wants to do all these things and they might leave me if I don't do these
Oh my
things,
God, I can
or
feel my blood pressure going up just like
right?
hearing you talk about this.
Yes. I
And I
think if we
remember
even,
thinking those thoughts, like there was definitely a
me
time in my
too.
life that that's how I used to think about it.
Me too. And we're seeing it with young people where, you know, all over TikTok, you can find out how to choke your partner. And so choking is becoming kind of like
Huh.
what's expected in sex. So you
Oh,
need to
weird.
actually, and do people actually want it or like it? I don't know, because I don't think they're having a lot of those
Right.
conversations. So to feel kind of empowered to say my body, my experiences, and then also feel comfortable in having skills to be curious and step outside those or close to your
Yeah.
edges and see what else is out there. I think people are having a lot of sex without talking about these things, and then having experiences that maybe are not necessarily violations, but they're not affirmations either.
That's such a good way of
Right?
putting it. Yes. I feel like so much of the yucky feeling after bad sex can be summarized by what you just said. It's like nobody did anything wrong, but I feel icky and like my stomach feels icky or my skin feels creepy crawly. And like, what is that if it wasn't an actual consent violation? A lot of people just go, I don't know. I guess I'm just weird about sex.
Yeah, I think I've done that. I'm
Yeah.
just like, oh, I guess it's just what it feels like. And
Yeah.
so, okay. Yeah, I think that's a big part also of where we fall into self-betrayal. And so we do things with our bodies for other people's pleasure because we accept that, okay, maybe sex shouldn't feel good. Maybe this is the peak. The
Yeah.
peak is that, oh, this person likes me. We might be
Yeah.
bartering emotional connection through physical connection.
There's also, I think, like you started with this idea that there's something perverted around whatever you fantasize about. If it's outside the norm, if you happen to fantasize about exactly what was scripted, then you should probably be good. You'll probably feel pretty good about that.
Yeah.
But most of us have at least some range, right, that sits outside that norm, that sits more in a kink space and makes us feel, if we don't have other people talking about that, affirming that, or like, you know, really just celebrating that, then it can feel like there's something wrong with you. And it can feel super shameful or dirty. And it can feel like if I were ever to voice this, the person would like slam the sexual door in my face. Like it would just end the erotic experience completely. They would break up with me. They would, I don't know, tell everybody. It breeds this feeling that you have to stay on guard, that you can
Yes.
never let anyone know you fully during sex, which is such a hard place to be.
Right? That is such a good point. That doesn't create a space for vulnerability. It doesn't
Right.
create a space for like authentic connection in our
Yeah.
human messiness. You know,
Yeah.
we're gonna get rejected. We're going to be uncomfortable. We're gonna be awkward. We're gonna fall off the bed. We're gonna fart. Someone's period's gonna come. You know, these are just things
Right.
that happen. And when they happen for people, they become devastating because of what you said,
Yes.
right? Because we're not being vulnerable and we think that we're controlling, you know, how this person relates to us and how much we can
Yeah.
possess them by being the perfect thing.
Oh my
But
God, there were literal
yeah.
magazine articles growing up that were like the it happened to me story, right? Like I asked him to suck my toes and he was disgusted and started vomiting and left, you know, and like it just you hear these stories when you're growing up, or at least I did, and it was like you must keep control at every moment of like the least controllable part of our lives.
Right. Yeah. And the space where it's your erotic experience is such an opportunity to go into parts of yourselves that
Yeah.
isn't safe to go into, or that we don't have tools to go into in
Yeah.
other ways. And so kink often plays with that shadow side, that dark side, and we create a beginning and an end so that that's where that stuff stays, and we don't kind of bleed it into
Totally.
our in real life. But yeah, it's very hard to do that if you're not
Yeah.
being vulnerable.
Well, that speaks to a whole other thing, too, because I feel like a lot of times when we think about erotic imagination, fantasy, whatever, we think about stuff we'd want to happen, rather than stuff that might serve some other purpose. Like what you were saying, it brings up a certain feeling, right? Maybe what you are imagining, like a non-consensual sex fantasy or something, you would never want that to happen, but it is bringing up a way for you to process an experience that you had that was traumatic, or give over so that you can have a shame-free experience because you were sort of forced into it in the fantasy or whatever, so that you can like touch some part of your authentic self that you can't touch otherwise. Like it does a lot more. It serves a lot more purposes than just telling you what you want to do in bed.
Ooh, yeah. I love what you said about like that being able to touch these parts of ourselves, right? That we get to build a relationship to these parts of ourselves. You
Yeah.
know, because like some people struggle with why would someone want to feel pain in sex, or why would someone want to feel fear in sex? And when we think about, you know, things like if you like horror movies, if you like roller coasters, I
Right.
like neither of those, but we are trading fear for fun in those experiences. So,
Yes.
you know, there are other rewards that actually get redefined when we're in an erotic space. And so we're
Yes.
suspending our understanding of these feelings, or even sometimes our ethics around certain experiences, so that we can play with those feelings. All of us have the
Totally.
ability to be a bully. Right? You could be a bully, I could be a bully, but we're like, no, society says we have to do this and this, so we're
Yeah.
good people. But it's kind of fun to be a bully, right? It's
Yeah.
like fun to do what you want. It's like there's a charisma around it that you can experience if someone consents to that kind of dynamic.
Yes. That reminds me of the bratty bottom, too. I
Yes.
feel like there is, so much as a teenage girl. There's so, well, I don't know, maybe not everybody, but my experience as a teenage girl was like everybody is on you about being bratty. It's like a big notable thing. If you give any pushback, you're called bratty, whatever. And I do kind of love and can really understand why someone would want a space to just fucking go for it. Like to mouth off and be such a just, you know what I mean? Like go into the thing that they were not allowed to go into, or that was stigmatized in some way or notable in some way, and have it just be explored. And there's so many avenues that can be that.
Oh my gosh, that's a great example. And I think, the idea of being naughty or the idea of being punished, kind of like this sassy punishment or a punishment, there's all these themes that we just don't have a lot of control over in our day-to-day life. And so
Totally.
to be able to create that experience within an erotic space, so hot and so therapeutic. Like while kink is not therapy, it can offer people therapeutic tools.
Definitely. And I want to give you a strange example because I feel like this has come up with so many clients, and I'm always like, we got to publicize this one's got to get out there. So I'm 37. I've never wanted kids. I, until a couple years ago, maybe never even had any, not even like the slightest passing impulse to get pregnant or anything. But then it's like, you know, a little biological clock kind of tick tock every here and there, right? So now I have this new tiny little occasional tick tock, and I don't know what to do with it because it doesn't change what I want. But what I've discovered is that playing it out, what my brain can do with it safely is make it sexy. And so occasionally, very occasionally, I will like play out this whole erotic space. And I realized like that is the place for me that if I were to feel bad about that or confused about what this means, obviously it wouldn't be fun anymore. But to tell my partner, like, listen, we're gonna play a game. And I need you to know that this is fake, 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 never gonna happen, never gonna happen. But like it provides this really luscious way of, again, touching something that is authentic, but not dominant, right? Like it's not I could just do the thing. That's not what I want. But to touch something in that way allows me to process and connect and honor it as an occasional impulse without needing it to mean, oh, this is the path of my life now.
Oh, I love that for you. I love that that became like a place where you could put that stuff. And I think it sounds like you had, very convicted and very strong feelings around this life choice. And so anytime we have like some kind of passionate, strong feeling, sometimes like it can flip over. So the opposite side of it, right? Yes, like that becomes eroticized because we have to do something with the opposing force,
Oh, which I think is exactly what is so cool about playing in this space. Now that you're saying it that way, is like it allows us to integrate.
Yes,
Like,
we feel more whole.
yes, it brings so many parts of ourselves across the spectrum when you're like, well, I'm the left side of the spectrum and not the right. But then you're like, okay, but what if I could just play on the right side occasionally and now I'm whole. I have the whole spectrum is available to me and doesn't feel scary anymore.
People experience this a lot with things that they find disgusting outside of the bedroom, but
Oh,
in the
sure,
bedroom, they're like, put your toes in my mouth or whatever. So even our brain, I mean, as arousal goes up, disgust goes down. And so afterwards, you're gonna be like, no, get your feet away from me, right? You're not turned on anymore. But yeah, I find
Totally.
that, sometimes I have fantasies that I masturbate to, and then afterwards I'm like, that was so good. And oh my God, I'm so fucked up. And
It's
that's
like
kind of
the,
okay.
so it is totally okay. It's the thing of if you're watching like something really intense, like a hardcore porn scene or something, and then after you come, you're like, why would someone put this
Why?
on?
Yeah, who
This is
did this?
overwhelming.
Exactly.
Okay, so the approach that you bring to your clients to allow all of this touching of places, integrating, exploring, you know, whatever that is, how do you suggest people approach their own fantasies and desires this way?
Very much like the way that you're approaching it. So to find out what's the thing you're interested in. So if it's spanking, if it's dominance, if it's whatever, What's the story of your fantasy? So I want to hear, tell me more. And so if your partner comes to you with something like, babe, can I pee on you? It's a little bit easier to have a conversation about that if someone says, oh, like, I don't know a lot about that. And but can you tell me more? Because I love hearing, what your little dirty brain is into. And so if I say to you, I want to pee on you because I think it's like about connection and it's like another fluid I can give you. It's like something that's adoring. Your partner might have immediately thought, oh, I'm not into degradation. I'm not into humiliation. Pee's gross. But hearing it from a different story angle actually gives you more prongs to play with. So even if pee is off the table, we can play with adoration. We can play with other fluids. We can play with, connection in this way that the person suggested it through something that the other person wasn't into. So often I get people to look at even erotica if they have a hard time kind of thinking about what their story is about, because erotica just forces our brain to connect to the story in a different way. It gives us the descriptions, it gives us the language, and it can build your erotic vocabulary. That's a great place to start.
I love that. And what would you say, just beside general shame, I guess, is like, what are the big obstacles that you see people run into as they try to explore this? Because I know a lot of people will say, I don't even think I have fantasies. Like, that just even asking them to explore what sounds hot to them is like a blank slate. So, well, actually, I guess that was two questions, but let's start with the biggest obstacles.
For the biggest obstacle, I think it's that limitation of I can only, kind of embody my first reaction to whatever this thing is. So if it's spanking and you think of spanking as punishment, it's really hard to think of, well, spanking could also be about playfulness. It could also be about pain. It could be because you're wearing a school girl outfit. It could be because, you just have a really nice butt and it deserves some attention, right? And I think people get stuck. They get stuck in this doesn't feel like me. There's none of that bridge from the fantasy to things inside of themselves that they could actually pivot to. So you're kind of pivoting out of your regular self into this kinky space, and there's more stuff there. There's more stuff that we can play with. But if we only think of dominance as kind of domineering, immediately when I say dominance, even though I'm a femdom, I think of men. I think of patriarchal power. I think of like that kind of experience with power, because that's a lot of my experience with power in our world. But if we actually tell, if you feel you can't tell that story, or you're just not sure, you're just like, I'm into the thing. That's okay too. We can go experientially into this thing, but keeping the curiosity, so giving someone contrast. Do you like this or do you like this? Do you want to feel helpless? Do you want to feel adored? Do you want to feel afraid? Do you want to feel nurtured? And that can sometimes help someone kind of translate their desires, even if it's not a fantasy, but their desires into a real life space where they can co-create with somebody else, where it's not just like, oh, I'm coming to you, Jesse, and like do this thing for me. It's like, no, like what can we connect on?
So I want to point out, because one of the tools for people who are coming from diet culture into intuitive eating and really struggling to get to know what they like or want on an authentic or like body wisdom level is giving them contrasting questions like, do you want crunchy or soft? Do you want salty or sweet? It's such a helpful tool because it takes something that is literally limitless and can be completely overwhelming and gives you a little binary, and you can just go through binary by binary and find a whole bunch of really useful information that you might not have been able to connect to before. So I love that that
Oh
tool
my
applies here
gosh.
too.
Oh, that's so great that it exists there too. Yeah, because it is very much about that kind of like connecting into things that don't necessarily have words or a shape yet, right?
Especially when it's overwhelming or you have any shame
Yes.
living there. The other
Absolutely.
thing I wanted to say is that what I hear in what makes this so difficult is partly that people have like a fixed idea of the context or meaning of each thing, as if you would just be born liking or not liking spanking, liking or not liking choking, like that these are just, that they mean one thing, they always mean the same thing, and you will either like it or not like it. And I feel that nothing could be further from the truth, and that so many things that would have been absolutely untenable with one partner are luscious with someone else or in the right context or under the right circumstances. And that you can also like evolve what feels appealing as the meanings evolve or they gain different contexts. And it really is not like a yes or no permanent fixed system of desire for most of us.
Oh, I love that summary. I think that some people have like a pathology. They sniffed their mom's pantyhose when they were eight and they have a pantyhose fetish. Great. You know, but I mean, even for myself, I used to read my mom's like romance novels, you know, with like someone who's like blouse is open and the flowy hair, whatever. And so all of these romance novels were about female submission. And so, of course, I made a connection to female submission, right? I was like, oh, you just have to be, your blouse pops open and you come. Okay, great. Like, that sounds good.
I'll take two.
All right, yeah. And I actually only started exploring dominance because someone asked. And I was like, you know what? I don't know how to do this, but okay. And it gave me an erotic expansion first into my intellect. So I wasn't like genitally kind of turned on. I had like a intellectual panty wedding about stuff.
Where... I love that.
And the beauty of that is that it's still satisfying because we're still creating dopamine. We're still creating like endorphins. We're still experiencing a lot of the feel good chemicals that happen during other types of like more traditionally understood sex.
I love that. Intellectual panty wedding. You should put that on a t-shirt.
I should. Yeah.
Okay. So going back to the question then, for people who feel disconnected from having a fantasy or desire landscape at all, how do you help those people like begin the connection process?
Yeah, I would think about, you know, what are your favorite parts of sex? Do you like kissing? You know, kissing's like 90% of sex for me. I can teach 30 different things, but like, I love to kiss.
Yeah.
You know, what do you like? Dirty talk? Do you like eye contact? And then thinking about, you know, even using therapeutic tools like the feelings wheel and looking at some of the micro feelings around if you like to feel helpless. Is that because you like to feel afraid, or is it because you like to feel obedient? You know, is there something there that we can describe a little bit better? Even thinking about how you like your partner to feel. So do you like it when your partner is kind of big and excited and they've got like big energy and they're kind of, you know, initiating one thing to the next thing? You might be into power in that way, or you might be into maybe a character or an archetype in that way. So the feelings part is so huge because it gives us a lot of information about how to direct any of the activities we end up being interested in.
Totally. I also feel like sometimes the question of like, what's hot about that for you? Like, it kind of is the tell me more, but for yourself. Like, if you like something that you can name with confidence, what's hot about that for you, or what need does that meet for you, or what, like, what does it do for you, that thing?
Because
there's almost always going to be something more interesting than just that thing.
Yes, exactly. Even asking folks about, you know, what's a hotspot on your body other than kind of the usual hotspots, right? And asking them to even share with you, you know, what do you look like when that hotspot is like delighted? You know, are you giggly? Are you squirmy? Do you get kind of quiet? It helps people tune into their experience during sex versus their performance. I think we're so worried about being hard, being wet, lasting longer, doing this, doing that. It really actually starts to provoke way more performance anxiety than we need. You know, kink can also be non-sexual. We can do things that are service oriented or nurturing or dominant or whatever without having our clothes off or without doing anything sexual. And it'll still bring out that erotic fire in our minds.
So something I want to point out about that I feel like is so valuable to a lot of people that I've worked with and myself personally, is recognizing that when we think about our fantasy world, when it comes to sex, we are imagining like penetration is already happening. You know what I mean? It's like the sex has begun. Maybe it's not penetration, but there's like intensively sexual stuff is already happening by the time that we can call it sexual and name it a sexual fantasy. When I talk to clients who are new to this conversation, a lot of times the stuff that actually appeals to them, that actually gives them pleasure and desire, is like silky fabrics, dim, nice lighting, you know, like it's nothing to do with the actual sex, but it would so put them in the mood if we could just give them permission to focus on it.
Yes.
And a lot of times, just like you're saying, in terms of the dynamic, it can be that way too. Like play acting subservience or nurturance or receiving care in an abundant way. These can spark things. But because sex hasn't happened yet, we often don't even necessarily think to put them in the same category.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I agree. I think a lot of people have a hard time kind of understanding what the things are in the environment that seduces their mind and body, right? Like if you think about taking your regular ass shower, you know, that you do every day, or if you did your shower by candlelight, like that's a different sensory experience.
Yeah.
And sex is all senses. It's all about our senses. I call our senses, you know, these little portals of pleasure. Like, what can you see, taste, hear, touch? You know, what are all the things that you can do to bring in more experiences for your senses? And that's really where kink just gives you more tools to do that.
Yeah. So you have a course called something called Out of Your Head, Back to Your Body, right?
Yeah. I love that class.
Can you tell a little bit about that? Because I feel like you just took us into the next topic that I wanted to talk about, like the senses. Who is it for? What's it about?
Yeah. So this class is an hour and a half of tools that help folks who have trouble kind of getting out of their head and into the physical sensations of sex. So they're there, they want to do the thing, but you know, they're thinking, oh, that feels really good. Did we do the laundry? Do I have mustard? You know, what's happened? Did someone feed the cat? You know, or they're thinking, oh, that feels really good, but do they like doing it? Do they actually want to do it? Is my arm jiggling? What does my belly look like? You know, they're getting into all these things that actually don't add to their pleasure.
Right.
And it can be hard to get out of that. So in the class, I teach this concept called that I use too, called erotic anchors. And so I developed erotic anchors to give people things to feed their senses so that they stay in the moment. So if you are I'm a very touchy person. I'm a touch slut. So an erotic anchor for me is going to be touching something. So when I notice that my mind is wandering, I'm going to either grip my partner or I'm going to grip the sheets. And we want to do things where you get a contrast. So I'm going to grip really tight and then I'm going to let go. Then sort of reminds your body that, or reminds your mind that you have a body, you know, that you are in this moment. There are things that we can also do with our partners to provide reassurance. So sometimes people go into these experiences knowing they're going to check out, knowing that it's going to be a problem. Then they get anxious about that.
Yeah.
And so we've got anxious on top of anxious. And so we just say to our partners, babe, if you notice that I go quiet, or if you notice I stop making eye contact, can you just remind me to breathe? You know, can you like be like, breathe for me, babe? You know, like bring me back into the moment. And most partners are so happy to do that because it's very disconnecting when someone, you can see they're in their head. You can see they're either, you know, either somewhere out of the bedroom, or they're replaying porn, or like, so they're worried about something, you know? So yeah, it's a course really based on tools for this erotic empathy, like to understand what our erotic selves need and how we can support our partners too.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah, there's like 50 tools in it.
Oh my God. So you use the phrase sexy's in your senses.
Yeah.
And I think what's so powerful about that idea is that we have this idea that leads to body image issues for a lot of people, that sexy is a visual experience and nothing but a visual experience. Like, we all know that there's touch involved at some point, but we still conceptualize sex almost as being like attraction, desire, and good sex coming down to, are they hot or not?
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about sexies in your senses.
Yes, I think that we have so much work to do on getting way more interpersonally and sensually attracted to people. You know, we live in the age of dating apps where you're making a decision left or right based on like a photo, right? There's no energy, there's no personality. And so for a lot of us, we think that if we don't look like conventionally or commercially attractive kind of standards, then we're not sexy. How dare you, you know, call yourself sexy? And the reality is that when our brain starts to shift into the arousal state, our body is getting flooded with more opportunities for blood flow, which is going to increase sensation in our erogenous areas. Your erogenous areas are not limited to your genitals and your butt and your nipples, right? Like, I love my neck kiss. I feel like if you don't like neck kisses, you're like dead on the inside. So I don't know what to do for you. But or if you like your ears socks or your head scratched or whatever.
Yeah.
So when we treat sex as more than just genitals, when we actually think about, do I like the taste or that we inhale our partners or someone inhales us, it's an opportunity to give more of yourself during sex and to get more. And so visual is important, but think about, some things that look good also might not feel good, right? Me standing there in a corset looks great. Does it feel, can I do anything in it? No. Or we think about, we don't see, I'm touching my tummy, like we don't see like a lot of tummies as like sexy, right? And we think most of us spend a lot of time like sucking in or trying to make ourselves smaller. That is actually, kind of the antithesis of what I just described, that opening of the body,
The
that blood flow, the
softening.
erotic, the softening. And so if we can't tenderize ourselves by allowing in like more kind of more sensory stuff, it's really hard to feel like you're fully in your experience.
So true. And I also feel like, the thing I said before about like desires and erotic stuff being not fixed and not concrete and not whatever. I know that for me, the meaning of a lot of certain conventionally attractive things that I grew up, like you said, reading the romance novels and being like, well, I guess this is what's sexy. And it definitely felt sexy because that was not really, didn't have a lot of other options to think about it. I feel like as I've explored different things and moved away from certain sort of default conditioning things, that now, if I were to see like a conventionally masculine guy, good looking conventionally masculine guy on an app, I would immediately probably want to swipe left. He would have to write something so intriguing because it has gone from that's what's sort of coded as erotic to it's become coded as I associate that with like bad sex and disconnective experiences. Like that's just not my vibe. Not that he couldn't be, right? But like that is so much of a difference that has changed over the course of different experiences. And people tend to think even that like I like what I like and it's visual instead of I've learned to associate attraction and eroticism with certain visuals, and some of those can be unlearned as well.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about this. I think one of the most important things I did for myself and my own relationship to my body and attractiveness was to challenge and interrogate what I was attracted to. Like, do I like this person or is it just he's tall and white? Or is this what, like, this is what
Is
we've been
this
told?
bachelor syndrome? Is that what this is? Or bachelorette syndrome, I should say.
And because if we subscribe to those standards and we don't fit them, there's no room for me to feel attractive in there. So it doesn't matter if I'm pulling those people, I'm not going to be able to feel attractive. And so I really went on a spree with my dating apps of focusing on people that were under the height that I thought that it had to be, right? And even just like going, I mean, most people's profiles are not that great either, but like really trying to say, okay, this person's a person of color, or this person's, a plus size person, or things that I know are not conventionally attractive. And it the things that it did for my self-esteem and my connections, I was missing out on so many good dates because I was doing the, okay, you have to look like this. And so much of it also was for me as a plus size person. I didn't want to be the bigger person because we're told that you should be the smaller one and a man should be the bigger one. And so I was playing into all these other kinds of gross misogyny that was living in me. And setting yourself free from that means you have to interrogate those beauty standards that we were all socialized with. Like, it actually starts to feel bananas after you've done it. You're like,
Really
so
does.
we own, like,
I'm
the
like,
idea of
oh, so I
sexiness
know
is like,
nothing. We all know nothing. This is all a lie. Attraction is
everything's
completely different than we were taught.
a lie. And you might have your preferences, but I would interrogate them. I would say, like, okay, like, is this meant to sell me something and sell me people?
Totally. And I would also say, from a body image standpoint, I think, unfortunately, most people probably, if we're just talking numbers, learned that they themselves are not a suitable object of desire. They're not desirable. They don't fit enough. They don't check enough boxes, whatever. And I think that one alone would be hard just to like unlearn about yourself. But as you unlearn it about everyone else, you start to be able to neutralize yourself in a way that you were probably not going to be able to without starting to recognize, like, well, if I can be attracted to all these different shapes and sizes, even though I used to think I was only attracted to one thing, like, where do I fit into this bigger picture? It's so healing.
Yes. And then we can trust our senses and not just kind of, oh, does this look good? Am I like arched in the right way? Or does it feel good? You know, I sweat so much during sex. I used to be so embarrassed about it. And now it's not even, it's neutralized. It's really kind of like, this is just what happens when I'm on my way to an orgasm, you know, great destination to be sweaty for, you know, like,
Oh man, that makes me think too that I used to watch a lot more. I used to just be more interested in like lesbian porn generally. And as I started exploring my queer self in the real world, I can no longer watch it. I'm like, these two people are not having fun. Neither of them is having a good time right now. Like, this is so performative and nonsensical. Like, it definitely changes how we perceive those things when there's different experiences of erotic pleasure behind them, like embodied.
Yes, that's so cool that that happened for you when you were doing the in real life. Like queer exploration,
It makes me feel very stupid because I'm like, how was this ever hot to me? And the answer
we're
is,
all
I
there.
didn't have any other options to
We
compare it
didn't
to,
know.
right?
We
Like, we didn't
didn't
know. Okay, so something that I did want to touch on here is
Sorry.
that you specifically teach skills. You teach sex, kink, pleasure, and BDSM skills. And I think this is important to be really clear. Why is it important that we approach these as learnable skills as opposed to like, intuition or talent or something like that? Why is that so helpful?
Great question. 'Cause I think for the psychological BDSM tools, so you know, creating fear for someone or creating adoration or whatever the feeling is, because we're so stuck with those stereotypes, it's hard to know that there's anything else. So when you take my classes, I teach you how to explore that from different angles so that you can open up. Like maybe there's something there for you that's not there for someone else. The technique, so things like bondage, things like impact play, things like sensation play, some of these techniques have the potential to cause injury. And so we might sometimes want to hurt somebody, but we don't want to injure anybody, right? So knowing how to do things safely, knowing what to do if something goes wrong, like if there's a mistake, how do we recover from that? How do we, you know, kind of carry through this? And also how to create. Kinksters use this term like container. So we want to create a container, right? And so in that container, we have to have things like consent and communication and boundaries, all the good stuff, aftercare, all these great things. And if we're not skilled in how to offer and receive those things, it actually makes our kink a little bit in a place where it could be unhinged, right? It's not actually hooked on to anything to ensure that this is kink and this is our life. And even for people who do 24/7 dynamics, they have a continuum of experiences. And so it's not, you're not just intense all the time. So for me, when I started, I started taking classes right away because I was a nerd. And I was like, wow, I didn't know there were certain parts on the body that weren't safe to put bondage on. I didn't know how to spank someone so that I'm not potentially creating a bruise if they don't want a bruise. So the technique part, whether you're the person receiving or giving, we really, even as receivers, we should know what good technique looks like and be able to ask questions of the person doing things to us. And likewise, if you're the person doing something, we have a certain amount of responsibility to be bringing safe skills into our person.
So the responsibility aspect, I think, will make sense to everybody, but there's also the component to that of empowerment that is basically like if you don't know and you don't know how to safely whatever it is, then you're not going to be able to explore it. Or if you do, you're going to be in your head the whole time. So it really allows you to be present, kind of like any skill that you practice and do the sort of by rote, whatever version. And then once you're actually in the moment, you actually get to be in the moment.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I wouldn't feel confident doing something and treating it as if this was an experience scene. You can not know something and you can say to your partner, "Hey babe, like let's just like kind of like play around with these tools and you know, you tell me when if something's going a good way or tell me what this feels like." And so making it about, you know, as if you're trying a new recipe, like we're trying to figure things out together instead of this is a hot, sexy scene, but I don't know what I'm doing.
I also wanted to touch on the fact that, like, we think of good sex as something that should somehow just be magically, like, downloaded into our brains through adolescence and porn and I don't know, magic. And that's just so far from what good sex really is. So I love the fact that you're really teaching things like blowjobs or, you know, like rimming. These are things that are they're so specific and we get to learn them like skills instead of assuming that you either, again, in that binary, you know it or you don't know it.
Yes, my most popular class is Eat Pussy Like a Champ.
Is it
And
really? I love that. I was
yeah.
actually going to ask you what your most popular one was.
It's so exciting for me because when I started to explore my queerness, I had only ever been with cis men and I didn't know what I was doing. And I thought, well, I have a vagina. Shouldn't I know how to touch a vagina? And you know, I mean, all vulvas are so different. People's pleasure are different. Like, how are we supposed to know, right? And when I started teaching this class, it was I saw people, most people coming out to it were actually cis women. And now that it's online, we see much more diversity.
Hilarious.
But it's really great because I think, you know, blowjob classes have always been super popular because we've always thought of, okay, like, you know, cis men's pleasure is super important. We got to do the thing. Everybody's got to do blowjobs. But I mean, for oral sex on vulvas, this has not been a trend for a really, even though we know that people with vulvas orgasm more through oral sex than through penetrative or P&V kind of sex. So I love teaching that class. That's my big fat vulva puppet
Oh
behind
my
me. So
gosh, that's amazing.
yeah.
And at definitely, I would say, like, the thing in my queer experience that makes me feel like an idiot the most, for sure, was being like, I have one. How do I not get
Same,
this? Like,
same.
it doesn't translate. It just doesn't.
Doesn't.
Okay, so let's see. I did want to ask what the most popular one. I also wanted to have you talk a little bit about some of the other classes that you teach, like
Sure.
other titles or topics or whatever, so that anybody listening like can kind of get a thorough understanding of sort of like what the skills are or could be that they maybe have never thought to even bother go take a class on.
Yeah. I'd say my next most popular class is sexual confidence and in and out of the bedroom. And what's great about that class is a lot of the things we talked about today are rooted in skill. You know, sexual confidence is a practice. It's not a destination that you get cute and you're like, I never think about, you know, whether or not I'm good ever again. And in that class, it's great for people who are looking for ways to talk about what they desire, to understand their needs, to navigate things like I'm worried about telling my partner because I'm gonna feel they might feel rejected. I can't give them feedback. So for any kinds of things, even body included, I talk a lot about body stuff, including things like dysphoria and you know, even feeling like you just don't belong in this body. Maybe it's aging, maybe it's changing. And I think I love that class because I didn't have the level of sexual confidence that I have now, even when I started developing those skills, right? So it's like we keep going, we keep coming into relationship with ourselves. And for people who want more satisfaction in their experiences, these skill building things are what gets you that. It gets you that opportunity to play and have fun instead of being like, am I doing the thing right? Do they like the thing? You know, we give you language for that. And then dirty talk. Dirty talk's the next biggest one. People love to take dirty talk. I have three different dirty talk
Oh
classes.
my gosh. That's so interesting.
Yeah, I love dirty talk too, because it's basically sexy sexual communication, right? You make
Yeah,
something
totally.
sexy. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so as we're wrapping up here, I wanted to ask, what do you wish everybody knew when it came to sex and pleasure?
That's such a good question. There's so many things I wish people knew, but I think if I had to like tell people one thing, it would be that your sexual satisfaction is not dependent or even destined towards orgasm in order for it to be good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to get to orgasm. You don't have to get to a place where your partner kind of understands that this is your pleasure, that really your sexual pleasure could be, I had a really good experience. I had
Yeah.
fun. I got naked and felt comfortable in my body. I got to dress up for sex. I got to connect with my partner. I got to meet someone new and hook up. I think like opening up those rewards of sex gives people a lot more opportunity to practice a lot of the skills that we talked about. If we're just like, I have to get to orgasm, I have to get to orgasm, that escalator is so limiting. It's so
Yeah.
limiting because some days you want to get there and your body just doesn't want you to. And that doesn't mean that you can't
Totally.
have good sex or good pleasure.
Ooh, I love that. And there's so much too. I feel like, with the negative bias in the brain and everything, like there's so much that you're fighting against
Yes.
to be able to even conceptualize all of the rewards that can live in this space because, like, it's not how we talk about it.
No.
We talk about it as sort of maybe scary, sexy, dirty, shameful. Like it's pretty limited. And then also we have that really, really zoomed in lens around like it goes according to the script, the penetration, the orgasm, whatever. And I feel like from everything that you're saying, what you're asking for people to do is like to zoom back, to like take it all in and let it all be part of what can be pleasurable, desirable, rewarding, satisfying, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if kissing's your favorite part of sex, great. Get all
Yeah.
the kisses. Ask for all the kisses.
Yes, totally. Okay, so tell me about your store and where people can find you,
Oh my
all the
gosh,
things that they
yes.
can, check out.
They can find all 30 plus of my classes are on demand and they come with lifetime viewing. So you don't have to watch it
Amazing.
right away. Most of them come with little digital workbooks as well to continue your learning. If you're interested in one-on-one coaching, you can find all that stuff at lunamatatas.com. So it's like Hakuna Matatas, but Luna. And my merch is all up there as well. There's a bunch of stuff that I'm adding in the next few months as well. So you'll see more creations from me that are related to sensuality coming out too.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. I feel like we could go on and on. There's so many different things in this space that just make me so happy and are so empowering and liberating for people to hear. And I
Yes.
loved having you on here to share your wisdom. Thank you to everyone who is listening. I highly recommend checking out Luna's work and content and all of it because it really is. It's so warm and friendly in an area that's hard to find sometimes. Even when it's like positive, it's not always friendly. And I so appreciate the work you're putting out. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. All right, everyone, thank you for listening, and I will catch you next episode. Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Nealand, and I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to this episode of the This Is Not About Your Body podcast. I put out new episodes every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss it. And if you really enjoyed it, please go ahead and leave me a review. Also, if you're looking for more information about body neutrality or you want to work with me, you can find me at my website, jessenealand.com. Or you can just purchase my book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, wherever you buy books, ebooks, or audiobooks. We can also connect on Instagram or TikTok. My handle is Jessie Nealand. And because I make this podcast available for free and without any sponsors or ads, you can also feel free to show your support using the Patreon link in the show notes. And know that your support, if you decide to participate, is always very much appreciated. Lastly, thank you to my brother Jason Nealand for creating the music that plays at the beginning of the show. And thank you for listening, learning, and moving toward personal and collective body liberation.